When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome to episode 135 of The Ethical Life, a place where each week we talk about the intersection of ethics and modern life. I'm Scott Rotta, social media manager for Lee Enterprises, and I'm joined as always by Rick Kite, who is the head of the Ethics Institute at Viterbo University in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Scott.
As people grow older, it's common to hear them say they've reached the point of their lives where they don't care what others think about them. But I'll be honest, whenever I hear people say that, I don't think of someone who is firm in their convictions and knows themselves well. Instead, what I hear is that they simply think they know better than everyone else. To me, this seems like a narrow and possibly even selfish approach. Rick, I think it's important that we are constantly seeking feedback about ourselves, but I know many people don't like to judge others, let alone feel judged themselves. I know this is a topic you've been thinking a lot about lately, so maybe you can tell me where your thought process is here.
When we talk about judging people, I think we use it sometimes in very different ways. There is an element of judgment whenever we take any kind of moral stance on something, and if somebody disagrees with us, there's an implicit judgment that, well, I'm right and you're wrong. But there's a negative kind of judgment or a connotation to judgment lots of times in which I don't just think that you're wrong. I really think that you're a bad person or a malevolent or malicious person because we disagree. And I think that's the kind of judgment we ought to avoid. And I think that there's sometimes people where they say, I don't care what others think of me. Sometimes it's a response to situations in which they're being judged in that way. And they're just saying, like, as a way of kind of protecting their sense of self-worth, they're saying, I'm going to do what I think is right, even if others think I'm really a bad person for it. So you have to dig a little bit further and like, what exactly are people saying when they say something like that?
So I'm inviting you here to judge me. Mm-hmm. So I want to be clear on that. But when I hear people say, nobody knows my situation as well as me, and I'm going to make these decisions, and they might seem foolish to everyone else, but I don't care what others think. To me, that just sounds, I just can't help but think that that is just a really selfish way to approach life, because you aren't willing to even entertain that your ideas may not be the very best. And I guess maybe not selfish, that's probably the wrong word. It's sort of egotistical that, like, I have all the answers and I don't care what you think. And geez, that just sounds like a terrible way to approach things.
Well, and it depends on whether a person who says something like that, whether then they go on and they're just protecting themselves from others who are being quite judgmental about their character, or are they just closing the door to any conversation or any questioning of what they do? If that's what they're doing, I agree with you. I think we should always be open to sincere questioning of our behavior and even of our attitudes. We're not completely right about everything. And even cases where we have very firm convictions about things, we can almost always be improved by engaging in dialogue with others and sincere questions about what we are doing or what we believe and why.
And I think one time I remember someone saying that, and I was trying to be a bit provocative, and I responded back, oh, I think you're exactly right. And they're like, yeah, thank you. And I'm like, well, so you do care what people think.
Yeah, you only care when people are agreeing with you. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I think it's just, you know, just, and it just to me seems like it, ends the conversation, and I'm going to make a leap here in this in our conversation, but it just seems like so often, and I don't know if this is new or this has been going on since we've been talking as a species, but it just seems like there are certain topics that certain people just don't want to engage in. And sort of the current example of that, and it's current in as much as maybe for the last several decades, is you're not supposed to talk about politics or religion to other people because that just inflames people and it just gets people angry, and you don't want to have that discussion. And I'll say two things. One, more than a year ago, you and I, who have very different views on religion, had a really good topic on this show about religion where we had opposing viewpoints, and I think we walked away feeling like we still respected each other. And secondly, I think part of the reason we're so bad at talking about these things is we're told we don't want to talk about them or we shouldn't talk about them. I don't think any of those things are healthy. I would argue, and I'll let you talk, I promise here, but I think that we should have more of these conversations. I think we should invite more people to comment on what we're doing and ask for other people's opinion, even if we respect them a little, and certainly if we respect them a lot, because it can make us think about our situation in life differently. It can make us maybe better understand the person we're having the conversation with. There's so many benefits, and just saying things like, never talk about politics or religion, or I don't care what other people think about me or anything else, is just putting up a wall that is just not good.
I think you're exactly right. First of all, politics and religion are really two extremely interesting topics, and they're just fascinating. They're complex. They tend to be controversial, as you point out, I think partly both because of their complexity and because they go to the core of our self-identity, who we think of ourselves as being. And so sometimes people are threatened by the prospect of questioning who they are, like their ultimate commitments. And yet that's precisely why we ought to be open to the questioning, because if we want to get better, if we want to develop anything like wisdom, the only way to do that is to be open to questioning about those ultimate commitments.
Okay, so we probably agree most of the way there. But then, and if you're listening to the show and you're like, gosh, man, maybe those guys are right. Maybe I should be better at that. But like, how can you, if that, but that is certainly something a lot that does not come naturally to people, to process criticism, seek out feedback.
It comes naturally to children.
Okay.
And then we teach them out of it, right? I think a lot of times we discourage children from asking really good questions about both politics and religion. Or maybe it's at a certain age where they're, like in adolescence, where they're forming their social identity, is in conformity becomes more important, that they just make certain kinds of alignments. But that's a great age at which to talk about both religion and politics in ways that are really constructive. One way you do this is by asking questions. Instead of making pronouncements, or instead of praising or blaming, you just ask questions about things, and then the world kind of opens up.
And certainly, the stereotype's probably true of the average 5-year-old. You know, why is the sky blue? Why does that person? Why do we walk on two legs? And all these sort of rudimentary questions. And I think as we grow older, we start to have deeper questions. But at some point, like you said, we sort of had that beaten out of us, that we stop asking those questions. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because many adults are threatened by it. And there's a way in which the more inadequate the reasons are for the strong beliefs you hold, the more threatened you are by any kind of questioning of it. And then, of course, then children are asking questions. And so one easy response to the question is just because that's the way it is, or that's what we believe, or something like that. That's why it's really important as adults to engage in questions with one another so that when we're raising our children and the children come up with questions about both religion and politics, which are just these absolutely fascinating areas to talk about, we can actually have some real discussions. Now, here's one of the problems that we find is when we see examples of people, say, talking politics on news shows, lots of times what we have is a lot of blaming, and characterizing the other side as being malicious and or evil or stupid, you know, something like some kind of castigating, kind of negative characterization of the other side that works really effectively to make us feel better about the side we're on, but it doesn't at all inform us about why the side I'm on might be a good one, right? And so how do we do that? Well, we spend more time with people who have disagreements from us, and we participate in conversation with them.
I think another reason, though, people, in my mind, stop asking questions is when you ask a question, that sort of is admitting that you don't know the answer. And I think as we get older, there are so many things that we don't want to say out loud that we don't know. I mean, sure, we might quietly Google something and come up with an answer, and hopefully we get a good result on that Google search. And we do that all the time. But I think in conversations, even if we know people well, and somebody comes up and somebody says something, and we like really want to know more about that, but at the same time, we don't want to, like a five-year-old who's not afraid to say, gosh, I don't understand that. Explain it to me. I think as adults, that's not a message we feel terribly comfortable sending.
Yeah, we don't feel terribly comfortable sending that message. We really are tribal creatures. We want to belong. And one of the ways in which we signal our that we belong to a group is by using the language that the group uses and sharing their same attitudes. And somebody who questions is automatically positioning themselves as an outsider. That's really hard a lot of times for an individual to say, like, I'm secure enough in my identity that I don't mind being seen as an outsider, even though I'm part of this group, but I'm also going to question the group at the same time, right? And this is really important with any kind of organization or social group. You need people who are asking questions, because otherwise you get stuck in these dogmas that end up being false and you never find your way out of them. So you always need healthy questioning within groups. And yet the person who serves that role is often viewed with suspicion.
And it sounds like you're saying, and I think I agree, is that someone who, you know, obviously you have to have some basic foundation of beliefs, but if you come in and start asking questions about something that you truly just don't understand, in some ways that can make you sound or present as more self-assured, because you're confident enough in yourself and in everything else you know that you can admit that there's certain topic areas, certain things in life that you don't know as well. And to me, I think at least that there's sort of a balance there of self-assurance along with humility and learning to learn from others. Is that sort of what you're saying, that there's sort of that a mix of things that really makes you, I don't know if it's necessarily a better leader, but certainly a better person to like be around?
Well, better to be around in some ways, but not in others. So for decades now, I've been having students read some dialogues by Socrates, usually the Euthyphro, the Apology, and the Crito. These are some of his early dialogues in which he is engaging in questioning of fellow Athenians. And then I ask students, what do you think of Socrates? Do you like him or not? And about half of them like him and about half don't. And I ask, like, the ones who don't like him, why don't you like him? Because he's really arrogant, right? He's so self-assured, and he's playing games with the other people. He's asking them questions, and he's trying to trick them or something. And the other ones are like, the ones that really like him, why do you like him? Well, because he's really humble. He really asks questions. He doesn't claim to know things he doesn't know. And I think he's both. And I think they kind of go like this. What gets taken for arrogance sometimes is really a kind of really fairly profound self-confidence.
Yeah.
Right? Which can be taken for arrogance in certain circumstances. But you have to have self-confidence to have humility. And humility comes from the Greek word humus for ground. It means being grounded.
Okay.
Knowing where you stand. Or being down to earth.
Okay.
Right? And so there's a way in which humility, like this ability to admit that you don't know everything and to ask sincere questions, it comes out of this ability of knowing where you stand. You're grounded. You know what your position relative to others is. It isn't threatening for you to ask questions because you aren't insecure about your social status. And so that's why it's really interesting, and you kind of pointed that out, but that they go together, this kind of confidence and humility go hand in hand.
I could think of an example in my life where somebody was having a difficult time about something, and someone's reaction to that was just to help. Like, they need a little help. They're going through a little bit of a tough time. I can help that person. I know the help I'm providing is going to make a measurable difference in the short term. I'm more than happy to do that. And I think that's probably okay. I think we would agree.
Mm-hmm.
When talking through this with a person who was the helper, I said, I think it's great you chose to help. However, did you also take a few minutes and try to find out how they got to this spot and what some of the solutions are to, you know, fix this? Because I knew enough about this situation where I think I had some insight saying, well, this doing this might help, or if they would consider doing this also might help. And the helper in this said, no, I just wanted to help. I didn't want to try to micromanage all the steps that got them there and maybe the steps to get them out of that spot. I'm probably much more the person who may help, but then also I could have helped myself, but to say, well, you know, I'm sure you don't want to be in this situation again. And from where I stand, these couple of things might just make things better or keep you from getting stuck in this spot again. Is my approach ever helpful?
I think it could be when a person is really receptive to that, and sometimes they are. Like, but they sincerely don't want to get in that situation again. I think it's probably more helpful when you have a relationship with the person in which there's a certain kind of trust that is developed. If you're coming from the outside, that can seem judgmental.
Yeah, that's my exact worry. And I think this person, I'm certainly not a stranger to, but I'm certainly not extraordinarily close to either. And that's
right.
It's tricky. And I think I find myself being, unfortunately, sometimes maybe too judgmental, but at the same time trying to like say, I just think sometimes so many people are just trying to, yo, you got this, or it's going to be fine, or, you know, just it'll be better, it'll get better next week, or just, you know, it'll be just, you know, and these platitudes that don't mean anything.
Right.
And like, I think not enough people say, well, you know, it seems to me that if you do X and Y, Z is a lot less likely to happen next time. I'm probably say that more often than I should. And like you, and I guess it
is it, did you ever think you say something like that as an excuse not to help? Because that's a way of getting you off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
They say, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to follow your advice, but I still need this help.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just say, well, sorry.
I mean, it does. I guess it does make me less likely to help if the person continues to make the same mistake again and again and again. So maybe, especially if I can say, well, and I told you that if you, you know, did X and Y, Z will probably happen again, and you did X and Z happened again. And again, this and everybody listening here probably thinks this makes me sound like a terrible person.
Well,
but
we can put some context on this, because this also, these attitudes about making judgments about people, especially in situations where we might be in a position to help, make their way into policy. For example, housing the homeless, right? There are housing projects in which the policy is, there's a list that is compiled by the various, you know, service agencies in the community, and whoever rises to the greatest need gets housed first. But a lot of times the people with the greatest need are the ones that are least able to be helped by put into some kind of public housing. And if a high concentration of people are put together into a housing unit, they have the highest needs. They're not going to be able to help one another, and the whole thing is going to fall apart, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you have something where you put a few people with the lowest needs, it'll be much farther down on the list, but they're much more, say, receptive to take, like they made some mistakes, but they're much more receptive to reaching out and changing some things about their life, say budgeting or is work, or if it has to do with addiction, whatever it happens to be, to seek help, get it, and then actually start living more independently and making payments, and it can be successful. But there's many in these service areas that don't want to make those kinds of judgments about people to say that, well, some people can be helped and some can't in this way. We don't want to be judgmental. And so then let's just take the people at the top of the list.
But then I guess sort of spinning back to where we started this discussion is, if someone truly is, and, you know, the situation I was thinking of a few minutes ago was not anything nearly as serious as being homeless. That's a pretty bad spot to be in. But it sounds like that if you are, I guess maybe the question is, if you're seeking help, whether it's for something pretty big or pretty small, do you also maybe have to have the openness to hear from others how to try to avoid this in the future? And there's some, and I should predicate that by saying there are certainly times where we need help, where there's nothing we could have done to avoid this problem that we're in. And I think we can all think of what those are. But if it is something that you've sort of made a few mistakes along the way and you found yourself in a difficult spot and you're asking for help, does that situation do you have a responsibility to then sort of listen to solutions as well as receiving help? Maybe that's the long question.
I think of course you do. You have an obligation to do that. But then what do you do about people who, they have the obligation to do that, but they just refuse?
Or just sit there and listen because they know they need that to get the assistance, but then ignore the advice.
I've become less tolerant, maybe is a way to put it, with people that kind of refuse to put in a good faith effort to help themselves. And I'll give you an example of this, and it's still, I don't know whether I did the right thing, but it was in the winter. I was walking my dog in a part of the city where there was it was down along by the Mississippi River, where there was some kind of fields that had a lot of snow in and so forth. And we were walking through this, and I was throwing a ball to him and he was retrieving. And a car comes out, drove off the road and onto this field, and they're just kind of driving along this field, and it was a young couple. I don't know, they probably in their 20s. They were following tracks that had been made by like a four-wheel drive truck through this field. They're following those tracks, and then they crashed through some ice where there'd been like a puddle or something, and just the car bottomed out and it was completely stuck. And I walked up to them to see like what happened, and they got out and they wanted to know if I had a truck could pull them out. And I thought, I said, well, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Right? They said, oh, we thought this was a road. Well, it obviously wasn't a road, right? And I thought, I'm sorry, guys. You're going to have to figure your way out of this. Like, it was such a stupid thing to do. And I wasn't sure that there was any help that I could provide without, I mean, I could have taken really great efforts to help them.
Yeah.
Right?
But you don't want your truck to...
Well, I didn't have a truck there.
Oh, but
I could have called somebody who had a truck and had a chain. I could have, done all that. Yeah. And I'm thinking, you're going to have to call some of your friends. You're going to have to...
If this would have been your son, that would have been different, right?
Yeah.
But these were just two people you happened upon.
And then I just left. And I felt really bad about it afterwards, thinking, well, I should have stopped. I should have asked more questions. So, do they know some people in town? You know, are they going to be able to get out and so forth? I went over there the next day and the car was gone. So they made their way out. Yeah. But there are times like this where you think, I was being judgmental about those, about them.
Yeah. Because in your eyes, and probably accurately, they were being foolish.
They were being foolish. And I have limited tolerance for that. Like, if somebody makes a sincere mistake, and I'll do a lot to try to help them out. But when somebody puts themselves into a really bad situation without any forethought, without any regard then to the burdens that they place on others, right, to get them out of something like that, I just have very little patience for it. I think that's probably a character flaw, but it's just like, but it goes way back to my upbringing. And I kind of know where it comes from. It comes from family members who were kind of manipulative and always were seeking help for things, mistakes that they kept making. And at some point I just decided, I'm not going to have anything to do with that anymore.
You sort of predicated this by saying, there's something I did. How long ago was this about?
Oh, it was 4 or 5 years
ago. 4 or 5 years ago. So it's been a while. And you started off saying, I probably did the wrong thing. And I'm guessing you've told this story before.
Yeah, probably.
And you still wonder about this. And I'm sure there are other people who would have come across that same scenario. And there are some people who I'm sure would have spent a day, sacrificed their day to get these people unstuck. I'm also very confident there are many people who not only would have said, you're sort of on your own here, but would have either never given it a second thought or told it as sort of a funny anecdote about, oh, these crazy people, look at them, ha ha, and sort of used it as a punchline to a joke. You viewed this, though, as something that you're still mulling the fact about whether you did the right thing or not. And I guess to me that sort of says something about you, too, that you didn't just laugh this off or just call them idiots or, you know, whatever sort of pejorative term you could come up with, that you still are clearly not sure if what you decided that afternoon was the right thing. And I think that says something about you.
Well, people are complex and you know, life is full of judgment calls. And so you can't just say we should never judge people. We're judging people all the time.
Oh, of course.
Right? Sometimes those are positive judgments and sometimes they're negative. The trick is to get it right, and that's I find that really fascinating. And there's these borderline calls that, I'm not sure I got it right in that case, right?
But if you told that story and you said, well, the only reason I did it help them is to say they were black. Well, that clearly is a really bad decision. So it's I guess it really matters what we're making those judgments on, right? That this case it was because they made a choice that clearly was putting themselves in peril, and they continued down the path quite literally and got stuck. And you, at some point, you kind of have to live with that decision. That's a judgment based on a certain set of facts. There are people all the time who make judgments based on ethnicity, who make judgments based on, they're just a bunch of women. What do they know? I mean, there's all sorts of things we can say that we make judgments about for poor reasons. And I think those poorly reasoned judgments sort of get all rolled up into, well, we should never judge anyone. I think we can fairly say that, we can think of people in our country, in our country's history, who were bad people. And that's right. That's okay to say that, right?
Yeah. And in fact, I don't think anybody who says we shouldn't judge anybody ever follows their own advice, because they're, of course, they're judging. So they have something in mind of a certain kind of person that they're thinking about and a certain kind of judging. So we ought to just come back to it and say, okay, we are making judgments all the time. How do we get the judgments right? And how do we do it in a way in which we hold ourselves to the same standards of accountability that we hold others? And this is very difficult to do, by the way. We're always much more inclined to be forgiving of our own actions because we judge ourselves by our intentions, right? And we judge others usually by their effect on us, right? So, like, it's very easy for me to make a judgment about somebody who cuts me off on the road, right? About being a rude or aggressive driver. But if I'm really in a hurry and I've got to get over into the other lane and I don't have them, so I speed up and speed around somebody to get over there, I'm judging myself as just, I'm in a hurry, so yeah. I had to do it, right? I'm not rude or aggressive. I'm just, you know.
Got somewhere to go.
I've got somewhere to go. We don't hold ourselves to the same standards of others, and that's why we need to be in regular conversation with other people who can be critical of us to point this out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We end each show by tackling an ethical dilemma. And Rick, I bet you have one for me.
I certainly do, Scott. Let's say that you have a close family member who has been struggling with anxiety and depression. They disclose this to you, but also ask that you not share the information with anyone else. Is it okay to discuss the family member's condition with others without disclosing their identity? And especially, is that all right if you're just sharing this information because you're trying to get some advice on how you can help them better?
I guess I would want, I mean, I'm going to assume that the person who told me this, I have a close relationship, or at least a fairly close relationship.
Fairly close relationship.
Because they're not going to confide this with some acquaintance. I would like to ask, I would feel like I'd want to ask them two questions. One, why they don't feel like they can talk to anyone else about this. And maybe even more importantly, why they told me.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just got done in the past segment talking about judging others. I don't want to act like I'm judging this person, but they're clear, but I want to determine whether they're asking for help. Because if they're just telling me to tell me, I mean, I guess that's fine. But like usually when somebody talks to you about a problem they're having, oftentimes they're wanting help with that problem. In this particular case, I mean, I can listen, I can be empathetic, but like I can't provide a deep level of assistance that someone else could. So I guess I would be very curious, and not trying to sound judgmental here, but like I would try to find out why they told me this information. What was their motivation for that?
So say it wasn't really that they're asking for help, but you had a big argument. You had kind of had a blow up. You'd kind of had a misunderstanding. And then the person says, like, well, I just got to let you know. I'm sorry how I acted. I've been really struggling with this for a while. And they let you know, but they say, like, but please don't tell anybody else. Just keep it to yourself.
I would have to use my best judgment to make sure that I don't feel that this person is in any danger to themselves or others. And in this case, it would be mostly to themselves, I would think, because I think everyone would agree that that would supersede any sort of confidentiality requests that you may be granted. Mm-hmm. But most people who have anxiety and depression are suicidal. So let's say I'm confident that this person is not, then I would want to make it clear to them that because the number of people who know this is a pretty small number, and maybe that number is one, me, that they're always welcome to come talk to me about this. I'll try to provide as much help as I'm able to. And also, I mean, we've probably known people in these situations, and gosh, a couple months later, things can really be better. And you hope that's the case here. But if you realize that that's not the case, I would probably try to gently nudge them into seeking someone who can help them a little more than I'm able to. And I don't necessarily, that means they have to, around the Thanksgiving table, announce to the world that they're facing these issues. But there's plenty of ways that you can seek help. And it's not a very long list of things, but one of the good things that came out of the pandemic was the more availability of, I guess I'd call them, you know, phone-based, maybe internet-based counselors who you can chat with. And obviously, if it gets more serious, I think those people can probably encourage you to talk to someone who can give you a little more hands-on help. But in many cases, I think those counseling, I've not used one, but I know people who have, and I think those services can do a lot of good and have the real true level of confidentiality that this person seems to crave. So I might try to, if things don't seem to be getting better, gently nudge them that way.
Mm-hmm. What if you don't know about those resources, but you're kind of curious about what resources might exist, what you might say? Would it be okay for you to talk to somebody else about this person without disclosing their identity, but just talk about, like, say, I know somebody who is struggling with these things? Is that any betrayal of confidentiality at all?
If you're not disclosing identity, I just want to make sure I'm clear. You know, if this person will name Fred, and if you're talking to Fred's brother, like, oh, I know a person who, I think that seems a little too.
But you're correct. Talking to somebody who doesn't know Fred. Oh,
then I think in that case, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, especially if I'm pretty confident that maybe I know someone else who's kind of dealt with this and said, hey, I remember you told me like 5 years ago you were dealing with some of these issues and I think you're better now, right? Right, good. Well, I know somebody who's sort of dealing with this and I'm like the only person who knows. So like, what could I do to help in any way? I don't think there's any problem with that.
Okay, yeah. So that's not a confidentiality breach?
No, I certainly don't think so. Because, I mean, if there's something, if anxiety and depression are certainly something so many people suffer that it I don't think it's in any way identifying this person at all. Where I thought you were going to go down, and this is where I think it gets a little trickier. Let's say, let's just go to the Thanksgiving dinner situation, right? And let's say that somehow, kind of tangentially, this issue, not about him, but maybe something in the news or something on TV about mental health comes up, and you're just really sure that your aunt, you know, Frida, is going to be really helpful with this. Would it be wrong to say, well, Frida, you know, gosh, you've known people who have dealt with anxiety and depression, you know, or just sort of bring it up and just so Frida, and then you, because you know Frida's going to say all the right things, and then Fred is sitting there hearing that, or is that just seem like, do you think Fred's knowing exactly what you're doing, and yeah, that just seems weird?
I think that would be weird.
Okay.
And in a way, it kind of, I think it could be taken as a betrayal of confidence.
Yeah, that, and as I'm sort of talking my Frida example through, I think it does seem like that's what that is. I was just thinking it might be helpful to hear other people in his circle talk about how they don't think this is some, you know, defective part of a person. This is just something that some people occasionally need help with.
Yeah. The only thing I was kind of really asking about is sometimes people will confide in something that they want to keep private.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, you know, don't talk to anybody else about this. But the way we process decisions, like, is we talk it over with people. We talk it over with people that we think might have a little more experience or a little more knowledge of situations than we do. So is it okay to say, no, I won't talk about this with anybody? And but then the real meaning of this is I won't betray your identity, or I won't talk about it with anybody who might know you or be able to identify with you. I can still go and talk about it with somebody that I that helps me process it a little bit.
Yeah, I certainly would think that would be okay. And I mean, I'm sure over my life I've told people things saying, I'd really rather not have you tell anybody about this. And if I learned that, well, they talked to their aunt who lives in California, who I'll never know about this situation without identifying me, I would not feel betrayed in any way at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, again, I think it'd be different if you put something on Facebook. I have a friend who's dealing with this. What should I do? That seems a little different. Because then it almost initiates a guessing game or something. But in this case, I don't think there's any harm done. As a reminder, the Ethical Life podcast is a production of Lee Enterprises. Please subscribe to the Ethical Life wherever you get your podcast. And be sure to check out Rick's column about ethics. And that can be found on all Lee newspaper websites. For Rick Kite, I am Scott Rotta. Thank you for joining us.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.